This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. The U.S. has announced it's terminating a 63-year-old treaty with Iran that Tehran used as the basis for bringing about a case over U.S. sanctions to the International Court of Justice. That court Wednesday called on Washington to ensure its sanctions over Iran's nuclear program don't impact humanitarian aid or civil aviation. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo called the Iranian case involving the 1955 Treaty of Amity meritless.
Iran is attempting to interfere with the sovereign rights of the United States to take lawful actions necessary to protect our national security. And Iran is abusing the ICJ for political and propaganda purposes. And their case, as you can see from the decision, lacked merit. Given Iran's history of terrorism, ballistic missile activity, and other malign behaviors, Iran's claims under the treaty are absurd.
Pompeo called the ruling a defeat for Iran's effort to interfere with U.S. sanctions and non-compliance with the Non-Proliferation Treaty. And he said existing humanitarian and safety exceptions to the sanctions are still in effect.
We're working closely with the Department of Treasury to ensure that certain humanitarian-related transactions involving Iran can and will continue.
Washington also pulled out of the optional protocol on dispute resolution to the Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations following a legal challenge by Palestinians to the decision to move the U.S. Embassy in Israel to Jerusalem. U.S. First Lady Melania Trump continuing her visit to Ghana Wednesday, laid a wreath at a slave fortress known as the Cape Coast Castle, now a monument.
This is a very special place. I will never forget. Incredible experience. And the stories that I heard from the gentlemen, it's really, really touching. And the dungeons that I saw, it's really something that people should see and experience.
The U.S. First Lady will also visit Malawi, Kenya, and Egypt. This is VOA News. International efforts to help survivors of last week's earthquake and tsunami in Indonesia's Sulawesi Island are building at a time when hundreds of thousands are in need of food and water. The official death toll from Friday's 7.5 magnitude tremor and tsunami has surpassed 1,400, with hundreds more injured. Many more are still missing, and tens of thousands have lost their homes. Among the homeless is Masrita Arifin, who's living in a tent. She said it's difficult to find water for drinking and showering. More than 20 countries and international organizations like the UN, along with private humanitarian groups, have offered help. A Palestinian teenager was killed during a clash between protesters and Israeli soldiers along the Israel-Gaza border Wednesday. Paramedic Bashir Hussein said the teenager was struck by a tear gas canister in the head and he died of profuse bleeding. Hundreds of Palestinians threw rocks and other objects at troops. Nearly 200 Palestinians have died from sporadic protests since late March. Two Americans and a Briton jointly won the Nobel Prize for Chemistry Wednesday for their work on developing new proteins used in a range of products ranging from biofuels to medicine. Among the recipients, George Smith of the University of Missouri.
Am I proud of having cured a whole bunch of people? You know what? You should ask one of my co-winners, Greg Winter, and his lab, hundreds of people in that lab from the 60s to the present, who are way more responsible than me for that.
The other co-recipients include Francis Arnold of the California Institute of Technology, as well as Gregory Winter of Britain's MRC Laboratory of Molecular Biology. Russian President Vladimir Putin Wednesday said the demilitarized zone in Syria's northwest Idlib province is effective and no major military actions are planned. He said the arrangement worked out with Turkey reached last month calls for the removal of all radical groups and heavy weapons from the zone by October 15th. Mr. Putin also called for withdrawal of all foreign forces, including U.S. and Russian troops. Meanwhile, the Turkish parliament extended the mandate for Turkish forces to intervene in Syria and Iraq for another year. Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed appealed Wednesday for unity as he addressed a meeting of his ruling coalition. Despite a series of reforms and a rapprochement with neighbor Eritrea since taking office in April, he has been unable to quell ethnic violence at home. He also pledged free and fair elections in 2020 and has welcomed once-banned opposition groups home from exile. And South Africa's finance minister testified Wednesday in the judicial corruption inquiry of former President Jacob Zuma, accusing him of pushing policies to benefit the wealthy Gupta family. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 4th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The Concerned Citizens United in Liberia is planning another protest to demand a return of the mysterious $16 billion Liberian dollars.
We have called all of our people already to begin mass mobilization across the country as we plan for this unannounced massive peaceful protest across the country.
Martin Colley is one of the leaders of the group Concerned Citizens United. The mayor of the Monrovia city denies threatening protesters. IGAD's South Sudan envoy bids farewell with a call to warring parties to choose peace over war. Zambia's government is unapologetic for deporting a Kenya university professor. And South African schools to begin teaching Kiswahili in 2020.
It's a Bantu language for Africa, and a Bantu is everywhere. Even South Africa, Zulus, they speak all the same as the Swahili. And it will be easiest for African people to communicate.
Issa Kenya is a Kenyan national living in Johannesburg, and we will get reaction to Zimbabwe's tax increase on electronic money transfers. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In Liberia, the group Concerned Citizens United is calling for another protest to demand a return of the mysterious $16 billion Liberian dollars. But one of the group's leaders, Martin Colley, says they are being threatened by the mayor of the city of Monrovia. On Tuesday, the governor of the Central Bank of Liberia, Nathaniel Patry, declared that the $16 billion Liberian dollars was in fact not missing, as had previously been alleged. President George Weah, who has launched a probe into the $16 billion, also announced this week that the money had in fact not been missing. Concerned Citizens United's Martin Colley says Liberians are dissatisfied because the explanations of both President George Weah and the central bank governor are full of contradictions.
The Concerned Citizens United to bring back our money is planning a nationwide peaceful protest to further press the government to fully restitute the 16 missing billion. We have called all of our people already to begin mass mobilization across the country as we plan for this unannounced massive peaceful protest across the country.
What will be the purpose of the protest? The governor of the Central Bank of Liberia and even President George Weah has said that the $16 billion is no longer missing.
The purpose of the protest is to respond to the provocation of the Central Bank of Liberia. Yesterday, the Central Bank of Liberia said to Liberians that there is no money missing, even though there have been a lot of accounts from functionaries of government indicating that there is money missing and investigation is ongoing. Before President Weah could travel to the U.S. for the U.N. General Assembly, he told citizens to remain patient because there was an investigation ongoing into the missing billions. So why then is the central bank today informing Liberians that there is no money missing? The central bank is a party to this crime. So how can this central bank come back to us informing us there is no money missing when they are party to the crime? Across the nation, our people are angry. Our people are dissatisfied.
It's not just the Central Bank of Liberia. President George Weah has also said that the money was no longer missing. In fact, he said that the actions of people like you and the other civil society groups has brought Liberia into disrepute.
Mr. Butte, we disagree with the president because we were acting in line with the law. The assembly on the 24th of September was in accordance with Article 17 of the 1986 Constitution. So it is unfortunate for the president to describe peaceful protesters as rebels. He described us as rebels. He said we were rebellious. So we don't agree with the president that no money is missing because initially he told us money was missing. So an investigative panel has been set up to investigate the matter. Unfortunately, the president takes a U-turn. So this process is flawed with inconsistencies, insincerity and dishonesty.
Earlier in speaking to you, just before we started this interview officially, you had indicated that you and the other leaders of the protest have been threatened. Can you tell us more in terms of who is threatening you?
Certainly, there are credible information in our reach that the government of Liberia, especially from the angle of the Monrovia City Corporation, and on the youth chairman of the CDC, they have unleashed talks to hunt us everywhere we go. So as I speak to you now, as national chairman of Kokobo, I'm now at my house. Other leaders, other campaigners of Bring Back Our Money are now at their houses. And when you go on my Facebook page, Martin K. N. Colley, you will see some of the screenshots. People are indicating all on Facebook that that we will die before this weekend. Some of them have said they will kill me. In fact, as I speak to you, I receive an intelligence from a senior administrator of the University of Liberia where I attend and study economics that the government is pressurizing the administration to expel me. For no reason, simply because I led a protest on Monday calling on the government to expedite the investigation in order for us to get at the bottom of this national misery.
Mr. Kwali, thank you very much. It's so nice to talk with you. We'll be in touch.
Thank you, Mr. Boughton. My pleasure.
Martin Kwali is one of the leaders of the group Concerned Citizens United to bring our money back. He was speaking with me from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. Meanwhile, the mayor of Monrovia, Liberia's capital, has denied threatening protesters who are demanding a return of the mysterious 16 billion Liberian dollars. Jefferson Koji is mayor of Monrovia.
What I can say to you, that is false and misleading. I think this claim is great, and I think when someone levels such a claim, there must be evidence associated with that. But as I said to you, at no point in time, there have been no threat, because there's no reason why should someone, you know, threaten a person who is opting for a, what you call, a democratic process. Unlike the planners are planning something different. The last time when they staged their protest, even caught up the Liberian people, even the young people who were very passionate, who thought that they were going to take it. I said, no, it was not appropriate. I raised my voice, you know, and said to them, we must give these people the democratic space, because when we were denied space here, those, we went to jail, we were beaten. There was not a space for us to do this. So this is what we fought for. So for me, I thought that in my time, you know, as a policy maker, we must create such a space which, of course, was not provided for us. When there were countered demonstrations, it took me as a young person, it took me as a mayor of the city to keep the peace and stability of this country. I said they should have unhindered privilege. They should have unhindered interference. I think it's wrong. When you come to this process, you must be credible. You must speak on credibility with empirical facts.
Mr. Mayor, this Bring Our Money Back campaigners are saying that they're planning another protest. Would your city be willing to accommodate them?
Oh, wonderful. All we say to you is anything that has democratic participation is welcoming. And Mr. Bobby, you were aware when I served as union leader, when I staged a protest in this country, I was shut out. And many of the time I call you on the phone, maybe going to prison. So for us, we say to them, this is a country we fought for. This is a space we fought for. Once they can assure the Liberian people they're going to operate in the confines of the law, they can be assured of there will be total non-interference. We even call on the police to provide marching band for them so they can be protected. So no citizen enjoy a questionable right to impede another citizen's right. But if they are coming to express their own disagreement on a particular issue, as a mayor of the city, I reserve, you know, the unhindered, immutable right to protect them. But we also need to be mindful of the fact. We need to start creating false alarms, because we almost still have misinformation treated this country. And misinformation has the proclivity to destabilize the peace and tranquility of our country.
Mr. Mayor, thank you very much again. So nice to speak with you.
Thank you, Mr. James.
Jefferson Koji is mayor of Liberia's capital, Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Barton, Washington. Today is Thursday, October 4th. And please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. The outgoing head of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, the body charged with monitoring South Sudan's peace agreement, is calling on the parties to let go of the past and focus on implementing the revitalized peace deal. Former Botswana President Festus Mohai called the new agreement South Sudan's only hope for achieving stability. Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
At a farewell party attended by foreign diplomats and government officials in Juba, the former president of Botswana did not mince words as he urged the government and the opposition to work together to rebuild the country.
One of the reasons why I am optimistic is that I think even my fellow Africans of South Sudan in the leadership must be tired of fighting. You must be tired of fighting. And therefore, I think my last recommendation to you is the simple statement that I have repeated to you, that instead of destroying, you could be building.
Mohai says he sees a promising future for the country and called on all stakeholders to focus on the future rather than dwell on the past.
Let us forget the past and concentrate on the future. I am very hopeful that the revitalized agreement, which is more inclusive and where a number of all the sticking issues were openly discussed and at least verbally resolved, an agreement reached on the way forward, I think there is hope. I think that is why I said, well, this is a very good development and a new agreement.
Mohai says he is encouraged by President Salva Kiir's recent decision to order the release of all prisoners of war and political detainees as part of implementing the peace deal. He called on members of the international community to work together to effectively implement the agreement, adding that disunity among international partners during the implementation of the 2015 peace deal blocked efforts to pressure the South Sudanese warring parties to respect the agreement.
One time, I had a campaign about speaking with one voice because I thought that the warring parties in South Sudan will listen more if the international community, including IGAD leaders, including the African Union, including the United Nations, spoke with one voice. So many things went wrong.
The former Botswana president told the South Sudanese leaders the time has come to focus on reconstructing the country, not rearming their forces.
Instead of buying guns next time, buy textbooks, build classrooms for your children. Education and training is what you should be doing. Providing clean water for your citizens, building infrastructure.
It is not at all clear who will replace Mohai as the chairperson of GMEC. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
The Zambian government says it has no reason to be apologetic for deporting Kenyan lawyer and speaker Professor Patrick Lumumba. Professor Lumumba, a critic of Zambia-China relations, had been invited by students at Aden University in Lusaka at a time when Zambia is experiencing a high level of anti-Chinese sentiments. He was immediately deported upon arrival at Kenneth Kaunda International Airport. The Zambian National Student Union has accused the government of denying its citizens the right to free speech. But presidential spokesman Amos Chanda says the government concluded that Professor Lumumba's entry into Zambia was inimical to the social cohesion of the country, since the government had credible information that his speech was going to stoke tensions between Zambian citizens and the Chinese population in the country.
The correct position is that the Immigration Department and the Minister of Home Affairs, who is in charge of national security and in charge of visa entry clearance and all that, they made the decision that they would decline his entry into Zambia because they had credible information that his reckless rhetoric was going to center on steering up tensions between the Zambian population and the Chinese community in this country, among other security considerations. So at that point, they judged that his entry and activities in Zambia would be inimical to the social cohesion and the long-held, cherished reputation of Zambia and how it interacts with any foreigner.
I did speak with the president of the National Student Union of Zambia, and they are even demanding an apology from the Minister for Information, Dora Salia. The allegation is that your government is denying its own citizens the right to freedom of association and freedom of speech.
Freedom of association and freedom of speech is premised on an understanding that my freedom ends at the freedom of another next neighbor. The minister responsible for national security has a duty to determine the threat to national security or a threat to social cohesion. Minister Dora Siria and Minister Kampiongo have nothing to apologize about for performing their functions. Minister Kampiongo will argue with you that the freedom to ensure a safety and harmony within the Zambian and Chinese communities is probably greater than the freedom of speech of a Kenyan professor who wants to probably come and abuse the reputation of a foreign head of state. Why won't he do that on Kenyan soil? If he wants to attack His Excellency President Uhuru Kenyatta, why does he want to do it on Zambian soil and not on Kenyan soil? So Honorable Kampiongo, on that score, has nothing to apologize for.
Amos, thank you very much again. We are always very happy to have you on the show. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. We appreciate the balanced view VOA accords us. Thank you very much.
Amos Chanda is spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lusaka. A Zimbabwean businessman says he will challenge the constitutionality of the country's recent tax increase on electronic money transfers if it is not reversed within the next 14 days. Ono Musondi, who runs a number of businesses, says hiking the money transfer tax rate is unlawful. His lawyer, Alex Majakani, says his client is of the view that the tax violates some provisions of Zimbabwe's constitution as it was introduced by Finance Minister Mutuli Mbe without public consultations.
In essence, what he is saying is that on the 1st of October, maybe I should start by the background. The government, actually the Minister of Finance, they reviewed what they call intermediated money transfer tax. In essence, it is a tax or a levy that you pay whenever you do an electronic funds transfer. Since 2003, by way of background, that tax was introduced. And at that time, until, say, the 30th of September this year, you would be charged 5 cents, which was a flat figure. You're charged 5 cents for every transaction, regardless of the value of the transaction. But effective the 1st of October, when then the Minister of Finance was making a fiscal review or policy or statement, he then said, effectively the 1st of October, whatever transaction you make, you are charged 2 cents per dollar. So you would imagine, if you are transferring $1,000, it would mean that you are paying $20 just to make that transaction. So Our client is challenging the legal validity of those changes to the legislation to say those changes are not constitutional.
The government has got a right to actually increase taxes, isn't it?
Indeed, sir. The government has a right to do so. I would actually say that our client is challenging the constitutionality of that decision in this sense. Why list our law in Zimbabwe, in particular the constitution, allows the government to amend their tax rates from time to time or to introduce new taxes. Those taxes should not amount to what we call a compulsory deprivation of property. And now what we are saying here with this new tax, they used to charge 5 cents per transaction. And now they are saying for every dollar, they are charging 2 cents. But you also notice that in terms of Section 71 of the Constitution, one of the requirements is that the government must give notice before they effect changes to whatever, whether the tax or whatever, that will have an effect of depriving people property. And I'm saying property here to also include the money, because it's also people's property. But there was no notice, because the fiscal policy statement was made on the 1st of October, and then they said these changes are effective on the same date. But I will give you this scenario. I would have transacted with a client, for example, in the case of our client, Mr. Tondi, and the client would have transferred, say, 20,000 into account. Then by the 2nd of October, we now want to transfer that money to where it is supposed to go. And then the question is, if I'm transferring 20,000, I'm supposed to be charged something like $2,000 for the tax. And now who is going to pay for that? Because there is no notice. One would have thought that they should have at least given people 3 months' notice.
Alex Makakani is the attorney for Zimbabwean businessman Ono Musondi. He spoke from Harare with Gibbs Dube of VOA's Zimbabwe service. But ZANU-PF Central Committee member Believe Garley says the government increased the electronic money transfer tax in an effort to revive the country's ailing economy.
I would like to say, in the first place, it is his democratic right to approach the court of law. I'm not against that. I support that. Secondly, all what we need to do is to support the finance minister. Yet people will cry foul here and there to say, hey, taxes, what, blah, 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 blah. But the government will always sustain on taxes. And these taxes, they are administered by the Minister of Finance. And the Minister of Finance, let's give him the support that he deserves. This is what I'm saying. Yes, people can cry foul now, but at the end of the day, people will realize that the minister is up for good for this nation. This is exactly what I feel, that Mthuli Mube is doing something for good for this country. And let's give him the support that he deserves. Right from the beginning, yes, things are tough, yes, but let's soldier on, let's soldier on.
But when we look at such issues, are you not affected individually as Mr. Kaule and collectively as members of ZANU-PF in terms of such taxes?
We are affected, Gibbs, as Zimbabweans. It's not as a political party, but as Zimbabweans, we are affected one way or the other. But what can we do? There's nothing that we can do, but all what we need to do is we need a change, a change. If this can bring about a change, if what the Minister of Finance is doing, you will bring about a change at the end of the day, then whatever he's doing is welcome. What I can tell you, Gibbs, is that people will not stop crying. People will cry every now and then. Even if things are okay, people will cry. But all what I'm saying, let's give this finance minister the support that he deserves.
That was Believe Gawley, a Zimbabwe Central Committee, a ZANU-PF Central Committee member, speaking from Bulawayo with Gibbs Dube of Viewers Zimbabwe Service. South Africa has announced that Kiswahili will be introduced as an optional language in schools by 2020. The announcement has been welcomed by many who want to see the language known in English simply as Swahili become the first African language spoken across the continent. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Jambo, hello, asante sana, thank you. Kiswahili, a language spoken by more than 100 million people across East and Central Africa, will soon be available for study in schools in South Africa. The government's announcement in September to add Swahili as an optional foreign language in 2020 surprised some South Africans. Despite it being the most widely spoken tongue across Africa, South Africa has few Swahili speakers. But the move to add Swahili was broadly welcomed as a first step towards promoting a pan-African language. Economic Freedom Fighters, EFF party leader Julius Malema says, Swahili provides Africa a chance to free itself from colonial shackles.
We must have a language that unites Africans. If Swahili can be developed and it become a continental language, and then we draw away with speaking to each other, English
is unlikely to lose its status as one of the most widely spoken tongues in Africa. Way more than 23 countries recognize it as an official language. By comparison, Swahili is an official or national language in only 5 of Africa's 54 countries, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Kenya, Rwanda, Tanzania, and Uganda. But unlike English, Swahili could provide a more native connection between African people. Isa Kenya is a Kenyan national living in Johannesburg.
It's a Bantu language for Africa, and a Bantu is everywhere. Even in South Africa, Zulus, they speak all the same as the Swahili. And it will be easiest for Africa people to communicate when the African Union opens the border.
Swahili has for centuries been the language of commerce in East Africa, becoming a second language to tens of millions across trading routes. Sipho Mutema is principal of the Christians Institute of Learning in Johannesburg.
Learning about the depths and the wideness of one's language, it is a way of finding one's identity. I think it will bring togetherness, something that I would call Africanness.
Others argue that on a continent with 1.2 billion people and more than 2,000 languages, Kiswahili has more than a few hurdles to leap before becoming Africa's common language. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that's it for this Thursday, October 4th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music, and Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free, pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.